Podcast 7, Seneca and Claudius, Part 1. Welcome back to this podcast series on the life of Lucius Annaeus Seneca. We've now reached the stage in Seneca's life where we can say with more certainty what was going on. So the podcasts from now on in will become shorter and more frequent. In the previous two podcasts, we learned how Seneca barely got away with his life when the creature known to history as the Emperor Caligula took a dislike to Seneca's written and oratorical style. We also looked at the evidence to suggest that Seneca had allied himself politically to the children of the hugely popular Germanicus, and in particular to the two surviving daughters, that's Julia Livilla and Agrippina the Younger, both of whom were exiled in AD 39 for their involvement in an attempted coup to usurp their brother Caligula. So, between AD 39 and AD 41, Seneca was, of necessity, keeping a pretty low profile. He was unable or unwilling to raise his head above the trenches for an increasingly unstable Caligula to have another swipe at. But it is now late January AD 41. Caligula lies assassinated in the passages beneath the Palatine, stabbed to death by a gang of conspirators led by Cassius Chaerea, an officer of the Praetorian Guard. One ancient commentator, Suetonius, says that Chaerea conspired against his emperor because Caligula had mocked his masculinity. Another, Josephus, says that there was a political motive. Now my money is on the latter, although not for all the reasons cited by Josephus. The accepted story is that once Caligula's personal German bodyguard got wind of what had happened to their master, they went on a retaliatory rampage throughout the area, killing anybody they thought had had a hand in the assassination. In all the confusion, a soldier from a supposedly sympathetic faction of the Praetorian Guard discovered Caligula's uncle Claudius cowering behind a curtain and then snuck him out of the city proper to the safety of the Praetorian camp. The lead assassin, Cassius Chaerea, among others, attempted to convene a meeting of the Senate and restore the Republic, but the military and the mob remained largely loyal to the imperial house. And this is where we have to remind ourselves that Caligula was lethal mainly to his own class, the senators and patricians. To the vast majority of the populace, he was a source of largesse and spectacular public entertainments. Moreover, the people remembered the horrific civil wars and bitterly divided political factions of the previous century that heralded the death throes of the Republic. They simply didn't want to return to that kind of mess. So, unable to secure military support, the assassins tried to butcher any remaining Julio-Claudian family members, and they brutally slaughtered Caligula's wife and even his young daughter by bashing her brains out against a wall. But Claudius had been safely spirited away to the barracks of the largest armed force in the area, and, after promising a huge financial reward to the Praetorians to secure their continued loyalty, and following negotiations with the Senate, Claudius was declared the new emperor. His very first order was to hunt down the assassins and have them executed. Well, if that all sounds a bit contrived and circumstantial to you, it does to me too. Claudius. Dear old bumbling, lame Uncle Claudius. I think we need to take a much closer look at this man. And we also need to take a close look at the relationship between Claudius and Seneca, because that relationship is pivotal in what fate was to throw Seneca's way next. That Claudius had some physical defects is without question, although they were probably, much like Richard III's, not as pronounced as subsequent historians have made them out to be. This was, after all, ancient Rome, where a man's very manliness, his virtus, was inextricably bound up with his physical and military prowess. By the early empire, the concept of manliness, or virtus, was just beginning to spill over into more ethereal and intellectual pursuits, but it was still very much an era in which any kind of physical defect was picked on. Seneca wrote of one instance in the debating house when a senator named Felix Cornelius, who was immune to insults and charges against his character and standing, burst into tears when the Roman general Corbulo called him a struffa camelum de pilatum, or a plucked ostrich, and that was an allusion to his baldness. By all accounts, Claudius had a periodic head twitch, a stammer, some kind of sinus issue, and a slightly lame left foot or weakness in the knee area. In all other physical respects, he was, apparently, robust, being described as tall, well-built, handsome, and with a lovely head of hair. But whatever his physical defects, there was absolutely nothing at all wrong with his brain. He was studious and mentally agile from a young age, well able to present a harmless, bumbling outward face in order to avoid the more dangerous political games being played out around him by his relatives who would jockey him for power and influence. Realising he couldn't trust many of his own peers, Claudius surrounded himself with a team of loyal and educated slaves and freedmen, many with Greek racial roots. He was fluent in ancient Greek, able enough in Etruscan to author a dictionary in that language, wrote voluminous histories on the Romans, the Etruscans, and Carthaginians, and he even compiled a proposal to reform the Latin language. And he seemed to like a good time to good old Claudius. He liked his food and booze, he loved to gamble with dice, he wrote a book on that too, and he definitely had an eye for the ladies. As his nephew Caligula's excesses went from bad to worse, it's said that Claudius found himself more and more on edge. He lost weight, and his infirmities became more pronounced. Maybe he was waiting for the emperor's baleful eye to focus on him next. After all, he had seen Caligula's sisters, his own nieces, Julia Livilla and Agrippina the Younger, exiled in AD 39. For myself, I guess I find the sequence of events surrounding the assassination of Caligula and the elevation of Claudius in January AD 41 just a little too pat for my own satisfaction. The way that Claudius was conveniently found by one of the few military factions in the city still loyal to the imperial line. The way he was taken away to probably the safest place in the whole area, the Praetorian Barracks, safe from the Senate and their supporters and the demands to re-establish the Republic. The way his first order as emperor was to hunt down and assassinate the conspirators. I mean, let's be honest about this. Claudius was smart. He was very smart. And he was more than capable, I think, of being the eminence grise behind the assassin Chaerea and his band of conspirators. He was more than capable of pre-arranging his miraculous escape to the Praetorian Barracks with promises of financial reward. And he was definitely more than capable of throwing Chaerea and the other assassins under the bus by having them executed immediately after the event. After all, that's the obvious way of getting rid of any potentially awkward comments or rumours that might surface after the event. But what about Seneca's relationship with Claudius? Well, there's a lot of common ground there. Claudius was no more than 10 years older than Seneca, possibly no more than 4 or 5 years older. Both men were intellectuals, well-read and studious. Both men had had to pull their heads in to avoid unwanted criticism. And both men suffered from long-term infirmities that in all likelihood meant that neither had been able to pursue an active military career. It is, I would argue, highly unlikely that the two men were not pretty familiar with one another. Another weather vane is the fact that Seneca was never less than neutral with remarks he made about the emperor in works written after Claudius's death. At times he was even quite complimentary, and that's in marked contrast to the streams of invective that Seneca poured out in his writings against Caligula after that monster's demise. Yes, it is true that Seneca did circulate the Apocolicantosis, a political lampoon about Claudius in the immediate aftermath of Claudius's death in late AD 54 or early AD 55, about which more in a future podcast, but it's important to understand that that work was circulated anonymously, and it was authored more in the satirizing spirit of the end of year Saturnalia, a festival in which Mickey taking and role swapping were actually expected. Back in early AD 41, Claudius was the new emperor, and one of his first acts was to recall his nieces, Julia Livilla and Agrippina the Younger, from exile. It must have been this recall, on the back of the removal of the odious Caligula, that convinced Seneca it was once again safe to begin to raise his public profile. It's around this time, the dawning of the reign of Claudius, that I believe Seneca wrote his 3-book work, De Ira, or On Anger. De Ira is, I feel, written as a kind of warning. It's a call for everyone to keep calm and carry on, especially now at this fragile nexus between two emperors, when everything is in flux and there is much jockeying for favour and power. In it, Seneca basically makes a call for everyone to bite their tongue, calm down, and not say or do anything that is going to upset the balance between emperor and senate. Seneca explains what anger is, how ugly it makes us, both inside and out, its potential to wreak colossal havoc and destruction, and how we can take steps to keep it from rearing its ugly head. I'll discuss De Ira a bit more in the next podcast, but if you feel so moved, you can purchase an ebook translation and commentary on the ebooks section of the Ancient Self-Help website. So, as Claudius took up the reins of power, Seneca obviously felt, with his ally and patroness Agrippina the Younger back in imperial favour, that he could raise his head above the parapet and start promoting his name again. But he'd reckoned without Messalina. Valeria Messalina was Claudius's 3rd wife, and we know that Claudius liked women. Messalina was actually Claudius's 1st cousin once removed, and she was a bit of a tart, probably suffering from the condition that we'd nowadays call nymphomania. But nymphomaniac or not, Messalina took a dislike to the recall of Claudius's nieces from exile, especially as it's reported that the emperor liked to spend time closeted with them in private, and probably totally innocently. Agrippina, always the smarter of the two nieces, had the sense to keep a low profile and stay away from the imperial palace, but Julia Livilla didn't. In late AD 41, Messalina contrived charges of adultery between Julia Livilla and Seneca. Adultery was a convenient charge on which to get somebody out of the way. Although he was obviously operating in the social circles of Julia and Agrippina, it's unlikely, I think, that Seneca would have fallen into such a trap as to commit adultery with the emperor's niece, and he would persistently write against adultery in later works. No, I think it far more likely that he found himself caught up as a pawn in Messalina's jealous machinations. So much for Seneca thinking it was safe to start moving and shaking in Rome again. Seneca himself says he didn't see it coming. In a later work, he laments that he didn't even have time to notify his own mother that his world was going pear-shaped. He was hauled up in front of the Senate and accused. Seneca would later claim that it was Claudius who stood up before the assembled senators and begged that Seneca's punishment be mitigated from execution to exile. This, it would seem to me, is evidence that Claudius was by no means convinced by his wife's allegations, and lessening Seneca's punishment was both his own way of standing up to Messalina and a way of helping out somebody I believe he saw as a kindred spirit. But Messalina was still, in late AD 41, a formidable and powerful personality, and Claudius hadn't yet grown into his full authority as emperor. She could still, at this stage, get her own way with him. Messalina ensured that Julia Livilla was exiled to one of the Pontine Islands off the coast of Western Italy. And it was there, a short while later, that Julia Livilla's sad little life ended, some say by enforced starvation. As for Seneca, he found himself packed off at short notice to Corsica. He was not very happy with his lot at all. Just when he'd thought it was safe to start enjoying the wealth and prestige that came from being a successful, well-connected orator and writer, along came the fates and chopped him off at the knees. Seneca would moan and bitch ad nauseam about life on Corsica, and he'd attempt to get himself recalled from exile on several occasions by deploying all his rhetorical arsenal and trying it on with some fancy literary footwork. We'll see how he got on with that in the upcoming podcasts, and I hope I will see you there. Thank you for joining me.